Welcome. You're listening to Body and Mind, a podcast relating to health and wellness. I'm Beverly Jones, your host, and I'm speaking today with Dr. Carlos Durana. Dr. Durana is the founder of A Caring Approach, a psychotherapy, counseling, and complementary medicine practice. He's a clinical psychologist and counselor with over 30 years of experience and also has a background in complementary medicine.
Thank you for being here. It's always wonderful to be with you.
Today we'll be talking about anxiety, which is another huge topic. We picked some pretty meaty ones, I think. And Dr. Durana, we all deal with worry and anxiety. They're just a part of life. Do you think some forms of anxiety actually help us get things done on a daily basis?
Yeah, I think, you know, mild worry and anxiety and even fear is important in how we deal with challenging or difficult situations. Those are necessary things. They help us prevent, plan, get ready, just in case something happens. We want to be ready, you know? But when it becomes excessive, then it becomes problematic. And then when it's over a period of time, excessive and long, then it becomes an issue. Then it starts to affect us. You know, it may affect our relationships. It may affect our job performance, you know?
So how do we know when it's
or our
excessive?
Health even? Well, again, if it's something that is starting to affect us, how we deal with others, if it's starting to affect our job, how we perform, if we start to become, in terms of our own personal health, things start to worsen. Those are some of the ways, or for example, not concentrating well, starting to have maybe certain physical symptoms. Those are some of the ways that we then need to start paying attention and perhaps get some help at that point.
I see. Yeah. So are there a variety of ways in which anxiety can be manifested in our lives? How do we see it?
Yeah, certainly. And I'll be brief with this, but it's important to address some of the different types. In a generalized anxiety disorder, there's excessive attention to worrying and thoughts and feelings. We become overly concerned, overly attentive. So, for example, if you have a physical symptom, all of a sudden we start to pay a lot of attention to it, and the next thing we know, we think we're having a heart attack, for example, if our chest is tight and so on. We have social anxiety, where then we are afraid of being judged or evaluated negatively by others. We can have phobias of different kinds, where we're afraid of different things to the point where we avoid those things, you know, getting on an airplane, for example,
yes,
and so on. We can have panic disorders, where we may be, we have panic attacks as well. It can be very disabling.
Yes.
Obsessive compulsive disorder, where there are uncontrolled thoughts and with behaviors. We can have also anxiety that's related to having a traumatic event in our lives. We can have anxiety that is related to certain drugs that we might be taking or substance abuse. We can have anxiety that might be related to certain medical disorders. You know, so
yes,
those are some of the ways that it can display itself.
So if we feel that anxiety is a problem for us, what steps can we take? How can we get help for these issues?
Well, as I said, once it becomes more problematic, we may be, if we've gone to a medical doctor just to make sure that we don't have a physical symptom that really needs to be addressed, you know, then we may want to visit a qualified psychological professional, psychotherapist, counselor, and so on, someone that has had experience in this realm, then
yes,
get help.
I know you've listed some examples on your website of clients who have had issues with anxiety, and you were able to help them with different tools and things like that. But I think that you may have also had an experience yourself with anxiety.
Oh, certainly, certainly. And I'll be glad to talk about that. I've had numerous experiences with, you know, with anxiety.
You mean psychotherapists have issues with anxiety too?
Oh, of course. For the most part, you know. I think, well, everyone has had anxiety in one way or another throughout their lives.
Sure.
Period. And then there are different degrees of anxiety. But let me give you an example, because I think this example illustrates how, without seeking help, I was able to deal with this problem. And then, of course, I did seek help with other concerns. But when I was about six or so, I lived in Havana, and I was a city boy, and we had never gone to the beach. And I remember driving with my family, going over this hill, and then all of a sudden this incredible view as I was going over the hill and look to the left and see the ocean in the middle of the summer. It was incredible. The water was blue, the sky was clear, the sand was white. Beautiful, beautiful. We get to the beach and get into our clothes. You could smell the water, the sand. Oh, amazing. And start to walk into the water. And then all of a sudden, my father picks me up and throws me into the deep water. Okay? Mm. Now, I get my head out of the water and I don't know what's happening. I'm panicking. My mother's freaking out.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, in his mind, this was a way of showing me how to deal with deep water, that I would sink or swim and deal with that. Now, for me, it was, or he's trying to kill me. Now, yeah. Of course, I had a history with him when I was about 3 or 4. There were several incidents where I thought he was going to kill me. So at this point, you know, I feel very overwhelmed. I feel, you know, maybe I can't breathe. I'm going to die. But then he comes and he takes me out.
Yes.
But what happened with this was that I ended up, we didn't go to the beach that often after that because for different reasons, we were working class and so on. But when I left the country, I was sent out to live with my sister when I was about 13 or so. And then I was living with my brother-in-law, who was an outdoorsman. And he had a boat and we used to go fishing and we did a lot of things in New Orleans and in the bayous and in the Gulf and so on. And I realized I needed to learn to swim. I didn't know how to swim. And I still had that fear about it, okay?
Yes.
And so I ended up, I remember going to a YMCA and taking a class. And this is the thing with any fear, any anxiety, sooner or later, you gradually, it's best if you gradually expose. You know, we have this term exposure therapy and psychotherapy. You expose yourself to the situation, yes, one way or another, okay? But generally, we do that and we prepare. You know, we prepare the client with certain techniques. And I want to talk a little further later about the techniques. You know, I use breathing techniques. I use how do we talk to ourselves, for example. Because if I'm telling myself I can't cope with this, you know, I'm not going to be able to do it.
You won't.
I'm going to fail and so on. Then I'm not going to learn it. You see, certain ways of thinking that are going to disable me from coping and dealing with this problem, okay?
Right.
So what I was doing was a kind of exposure. I'm taking a class. I got to do this, you know, and I'm taking a class in a swimming pool at the YMCA. And gradually, you know, I learned to swim. I realized that I could float. Amazing. Ah. See, I could float. And then gradually, you know, you go into the deeper part of the water and, you know, and the teacher is showing you, you know, how to do that and so on. And then you're in the deep water and you're swimming and then you dive into the water. So you're gradually exposing yourself into the thing that you are avoiding. And then there's also a certain kind of social support, which is nice. A teacher is there. There are other people learning this. There are people that are maybe, they were older and, oh, they have this issue. They're afraid of the water. They don't know how to swim, you
right.
know? And so instead of feeling like a failure, I'm feeling, you know, a little more competent and I gradually become more competent in this and I'm feeling better about myself that I can actually do this. I don't become a great swimmer, but at least I can swim, I can float, I can...
You won't drown.
I'm not going to drown, you know, and so on, you see? So that is, in essence, some of the ways in dealing with anxiety or phobias and so on that we have to work with. We have to work with our thinking, the beliefs that we have, the attitudes yes. that we have that may be disabling us, that may be counterproductive. You know, yes. if I'm thinking that I'm not capable, that it's always going to get worse, which is very common with anxiety, you know, you start to feel maybe something physical, you know, oh my God, this is going to be a heart attack. So we catastrophize, for example.
Yes.
Or it's going to get worse. We fortune telling into the future. Or we minimize ourselves, you know, I'm not capable of this, of doing something, you know, well to take care of myself here. Those are negative thoughts and attitudes that we need to work on to transform. Because they will impair us in dealing, you know.
Yes.
And exposing ourselves to what we need to do to overcome this problem. Okay, so what other techniques do we use? There's the, like I said, the exposure. We call this then the cognitive behavioral therapy, where we're using, working with the negative thoughts and the beliefs and all of that to transform those.
Yes.
And we develop more, better ways of coping in terms of our thinking and behaving and so on, right? Then, there are mindfulness techniques that are very important. I think of the idea of mindfulness that is becoming more prevalent now in our culture and meditation. You know, it's this ability to tap into an aspect or a being that it's kind of like the center of a hurricane or a cyclone or a storm. You know, it's this calm place inside,
yes,
from which we can stand back and get a better perspective and really look that at ourselves and actually realize that we're not all of those thoughts, that we identify with those thoughts, you know.
Absolutely.
Or those sensations or those feelings that are there, that if I'm feeling anxiety or some sort of panic, then I'm incapable, or then it's going to get worse, or then it's I'm not going to be able to cope with it, and so on and so on. See? So it teaches you to stand back from that and to see that is not, you know, like in an example that I was giving with myself, wait a minute, you know, I can gradually develop some skills here so that I can cope with this. So that whole idea of mindfulness is very important. I also find that what I do is I call it more grounded mindfulness, because I work with that sense of your feet on the ground, being more grounded. And with many forms of anxiety, it's very important to bring the body into it, bring physical disciplines that are not just physical, but they as you're entering it through the body.
Yes.
Whether it be yoga or Tai Chi or Qigong or some other form of physical exercise for strengthening, or martial arts, or different kinds of things that give us resources. You see, because what we're talking about is developing resources within.
Yes.
We also have outer resources where we get support from others and all that. That's very important. But this idea of developing these resources internally that we don't even realize that we have them, and the body and the energetics of our body is extremely important in then how we cope with what we're having to deal with. And it's very important with anxiety problems and traumas and so on to tap into that kind of resource.
Could it even be as simple as developing a daily walking practice? I know,
yeah.
I go for a morning walk.
A sense of conscious walking, you know, you're sensing your feet as you're walking, and you're working with your breathing, you know.
Yes.
And if your mind starts to get overly active, to learn to witness it and not get overly involved with it, to step back from it. Sometimes it's helpful to use what is called a repetition, or sometimes it's called a mantra, a word or two that you can use as you're walking, so that then that allows you to disengage from the thoughts.
Yes.
Okay? It helps you get to that place of that quieter place inside. See, that conscious walking becomes then even more, let's say, holistic or more comprehensive or more
even body-mind. More healing.
Yeah, more healing. Right, right. And then you start to notice more as you're doing that. You quiet down, and then you enjoy the walk more. The endorphins kick in. You
yes.
start to feel better. You start to listen to things more clearly. The smells, maybe the visuals, the birds, the green, the trees. Or if you're in the city, you feel like you're more in that center of the storm a bit more, rather
yes.
than being taken over by the noise
yes.
and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So those are all very important practices. You know, we want to pay attention to our nutrition, because when we're dealing with anxiety in general, we have to pay attention to our blood sugar, because there are many, you know, we can get anxious if our blood sugar is not right, for example, drops too much and so on. And that can create physical symptoms that mimic anxiety, and that can turn into anxiety. And so we want to pay attention to good nutrition to support ourselves, again, on that physical, energetic level. It's very important at the same time. Okay, so another thing that is important is, how do we deal with that critical part of ourselves? That can be very problematic.
Yes.
Our self-judgments. Also dealing with how we are affected by people's perceptions. For many people with anxiety, they don't like to upset other people. They have a great deal of concern about what other people think of them, and be nice and so on. And that is a dimension that needs to be addressed very often as well. Another thing that's very important is, if we're having a physical symptom or a physical illness, what is the relationship? Another podcast that we did on our body, mind connection.
The mind-body connection.
Yes, yes. And maybe an example would illustrate this. Someone that I dealt with who had Meniere's disease that involves dizziness and ringing in the ears and other kinds of symptoms, and particularly the ringing was very problematic for this person because there was this fear that it's going to overwhelm me. It might just drive me crazy. I might even commit suicide because I just can't stand it. I just won't be able to cope with it.
Yes.
And if it gets worse and so on. And this illness is going to progress and then I'm going to get worse and I don't know if I can deal with this and take this. And so that was part of the anxiety there and with that physical problem or illness. And one of the things that I worked with was with the breathing, the grounding, that ability to go into that calm inner space. And then to expose them to gradually in small amounts to the ringing itself. Because there's a tendency, you see, that the relationship to the ringing is, oh, it's awful, it's horrendous. So it's like an enemy, it's like something that is overpowering me. And so I have to just not even approach it. Get away from it. The problem is the more I get away from it, it's there. It's going to be there. And sometimes then it can get stronger if I'm more tense, you know. And so by introducing this person to in that grounded and calm, mindful space to small amounts of listening to the ear ringing. And the idea that I suggested to him is like, you know, like what is it like when you're hearing cars outside and there's noise and we could hear that from our room where we were working and sometimes had him pay attention to that and sometimes have him pay attention to the ringing itself for small amounts in that calm place and starting to see that ear ringing was just like another kind of sound, you know, like cars or something else like that, rather than it's something that is going to be so threatening and so horrendous that I can't cope with it. But gradually easing into that and accepting it that it was there, and as he was able to do that more and more, realizing that, you know, this is not going to kill me, that I can cope with this and gradually learn to feel better rather than just feeling horribly.
I have something that is probably trivial, but I am deathly afraid of spiders and they cause me great anxiety. We have a house, we have a cabin in the mountains. And whenever we go, the first thing I'm thinking when I open the front door is that all these spiders are going to come jumping out at me, which of course they don't, but I feel that anxiety. And the thought of exposure therapy, that makes me even more anxious. So that's that's very trivial in comparison to what some of your other clients face, but I bet a lot of people are afraid of things.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Snakes, spiders, closed rooms, airplanes, many, many phobias that people have. Yeah. And one of the ways that may be helpful initially is to take time to learn about spiders. Take time to maybe watch some documentaries that really highlight the beauty and the, you know, the amazing nature of spiders and what they do, their function, and so on. That would be a gradual way of exposing yourself and appreciating what a spider is, you know, initially.
Perhaps I'm doing a little bit of that because they create these amazing webs outside of our house.
Right.
And I know they're eating all the harmful bugs around our house.
Exactly. Exactly.
Still, that's as far as I've gotten.
Yeah. 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 And you might read Charlotte's Web, you know.
Okay. There you go. I can do that.
So that's a starting point. Then there are other things that you can do further on, but I would say start with that.
Okay. Well, that's funny. I know that this actually is a big issue for so many of us.
Yes.
I know that people might want to talk to you and get in touch with you to talk more about anxiety or about other issues in their lives. And they can reach you on your website at www.caringapproach.com. So thank you for sitting with me and talking with me today about anxiety, Dr. Durana.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.